Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Somebody told me not to whisper the other day because it just like triggers them, reminds them of Joe Biden when he whispers. Oh, we'll talk about our friend President Joe Biden later on in the show. Also coming up today, Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who's of course running for governor, acts like a champion of Washington taxpayers, aggressively pursuing lawsuits to try to get money back for you that you're entitled to. The only issue is he's costing you a lot of money in the process. We'll discuss just the latest negative headline about what I assume is the front runner for the governor's race. Also coming up today, your pain at the pump is really good for politicians in Washington who want to spend more of your money. They are absolutely flush with it. We'll have Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center on to talk about the latest with gas prices. Also an unbelievable self-inflicted error for our friend Nadine Woodward, the mayor of Spokane, who's running in a hard-fought race to keep her seat. And Seattle firefighters have their heads on straight. At least that's someone in the city of Seattle. All of that coming up and more. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. You can support us for just $5 a month. It helps us continue this show full time, and we sure do appreciate all of your support. I will say the mainstream media is surprising me when it comes to coverage of Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Bob Ferguson, of course, is running for governor. I think there's this thought that he is kind of the heir apparent. I know that people don't like it when I say that, but I think you have to be realistic, realize we're in a blue state. He's clearly the front runner among Democrats in fundraising and a lot of other metrics. Although, has he dropped his is it still an exploratory campaign for governor, or is it official yet? I don't know. But there was an article in the Olympian that, to me, kind of proves, so for a long time, I mean, back when I was in mainstream news and, you know, during the Trump presidency, Bob Ferguson would just tout over and over, oh, well, you know, we're fighting for Washington, is suing the Trump administration, doing all these things. I mean, press release after press release, suing private enterprise. And at the time, I just thought, gosh, is this, you know, him really like bringing lawsuits that are absolutely necessary? Or is this him sort of politically posturing and trying to get headlines and do all of these things to set himself up for a run for governor? And this article, it's really interesting because it talks about the cost associated with his really aggressive litigation efforts at the Attorney General's office. The headline states, quote, aggressive litigation against Value Village may end up with the Washington AG paying up to $5.7 million in fees. And I hate that headline because it's not the Washington Attorney General who would pay up to $5.7 million in fees. It is, of course, you, the taxpayer, and that's why we're discussing this in the first place. So if you recall, so in 2017, Bob Ferguson's office sued Value Village, and the accusation was that it's presenting itself as a charitable nonprofit when, in fact, it is a for-profit company. But what this judge found in their ruling against the Attorney General's office in terms of making them repay some of the fees accumulated by Value Village during this process is that the Attorney General's office didn't go about the regular approach when it came to trying to make sure that a charitable company is following the rules. AG Bob Ferguson basically said, hey, let's sue these guys. Let's put out a big flashy press release. Let's continue to do that and not do the necessary work behind the scenes to try to bring an entity that says it's a charitable nonprofit in line with the law. And this is a judge saying this about the Attorney General's office. And so what that says to me is essentially, okay, he wanted to aggressively pursue this lawsuit against Value Village, make it a big splashy news story, send out all these press releases, when behind the scenes, it says, Judge Weedby said the AG's office refused to meet with Value Village or identify which practices needed to be changed during an investigation prior to the state filing a lawsuit, which is inconsistent with the purpose of the Charitable Solicitations Act. So what the state should have done, and Attorney General Bob Ferguson should have done, is make every effort to avoid a costly legal battle and go to Value Village and say, hey, right now, we do not believe that you're in line with the Charitable Solicitations Act. Here are steps that we want you to take to fix that, to bring yourself in line with it. If you don't, then we might sue you. Bob Ferguson went straight to lawsuit. And what is the result of that? The result of that is now millions of dollars in legal fees that we, the taxpayers, are going to have to pay. And there were also findings in this case related to an issue that Bob Ferguson has been dinged for in the past. It says, additionally, the AG's office was sanctioned $41,000 by a trial court in 2020 for its failure to respond in a timely way to discovery requests, while also making discovery demands that required Value Village to produce more than 47,000 records. Remember, this is the second time in just a few months that we've heard a story about Bob Ferguson's office not fulfilling their obligations of discovery. And that means not turning documents over that are a necessary part of the process to the other side. Remember the other case they did that in? It had to do with a mentally disabled woman who was being mistreated by the state. And there was like 11,000 pages of documents that the Attorney General's office willfully did not hand over. And who had to pay for that? We had to pay for that. Bob Ferguson has a serious issue with transparency, and he has a serious issue with skirting the rules and skirting the regular practice of things in order to bring attention to himself. And again, these aren't conservative outlets who are dropping these stories about Bob Ferguson. This is the Olympian. We've seen him in the Tacoma News Tribune, in the Seattle Times, about time and time again, his office bending and breaking the rules and it costing us, the taxpayers, money. And that's the guy that people want to put in the governor's office? That is a terrible idea. If that's how he abuses his power right now, just imagine how he'd abuse power as the governor. Just the latest story about Bob Ferguson. I can't imagine. Well, and then I'm like, well, nobody's going to listen to it. Voters don't care because they just vote for the letter next to someone's name. And they're like, oh, D, that sounds great. And this next story just makes things worse because people in the middle are going to be like, that's why I don't vote for Republicans. So you remember Lauren Culp? Of course you do. Lauren Culp ran for governor in 2020 as a Republican. He was just a small town police chief in Republic, Washington. I think it was a police department of one. Might have been him and like one other guy or just him. But anyway, he became this sort of interesting figure. I think he gained a lot of momentum on social media, and maybe in his mind he drew an equivalence between that and votes and thought he could win, and he obviously didn't. He lost by more than 500,000 votes. It was the worst showing that a Republican candidate for governor has had in a very, very long time. So you'll recall that after Lauren Culp lost decisively, he refused to concede the election to Jay Inslee. And even though he was behind more than 500,000 votes, he was making claims about voter fraud and talking about lawsuits around voter fraud. So news came out this morning that the attorney, Stephen Pidgeon, for Lauren Culp's 2022 campaign has been suspended from practicing law for a year because of those, quote, frivolous voter fraud claims. The Seattle Times reports the state Supreme Court has suspended the law license of an attorney for 2020 Republican gubernatorial candidate Lauren Culp for abusing the legal system by making frivolous claims of widespread voter fraud in that election. Stephen Pidgeon, the attorney who sued the state on Culp's behalf, claiming the 2020 election was illegitimate, only to withdraw the case under threat of legal sanctions, will be prohibited from practicing law in the state for 1 year, effective August 21st, so that's yesterday. In suspending him, the state Supreme Court upheld charges by the State Bar Association's Office of Disciplinary Counsel, which brought a formal complaint against him in December of 2022. And basically they say that, quote, bringing a frivolous proceeding and asserting frivolous claims is against the rules of professional conduct for lawyers, which I agree with. I think as a lawyer, if you go about making a claim that you know you do not have the evidence to back up, which they did not have the evidence to back up. I mean, how many times did the media ask for Lauren Culp's campaign to provide evidence that would suggest that the 2020 election, his election specifically in this state, was lost illegitimately? And they didn't. And so, yeah, I do think there should be consequences for lawyers who file any sort of frivolous complaint that they know is without merit. But I think there's a bigger issue here. And in the Seattle Times article, and I'll knock them just for this one thing, they give Shasti Conrad, who's the chair of the state Democratic Party, just carte blanche to use this one story as a way to smear all Republicans in the state of Washington. And she just gets to do it without any pushback. So it said, Shasti Conrad, chair of the state Democratic Party, wrote in a text message Monday she was pleased with the resolution of the complaint. Oh, you don't say. She said, quote, "This suit shows that while we're working to make sure everyone eligible can vote, Washington Republicans are still focused on stymieing the rule of law and denying election results when they lose." And again, that's just presented by the Seattle Times. Oh, hey, we got a text from the chair of the state Democratic Party. Let's just put it in our news story and let her just wholesale blanket vilify all Republicans as we lead up to important elections. I mean, that's ridiculous, and it's really irresponsible, the Seattle Times. And frankly, it's not fair. I mean, when you look at any Republican in an actual position of authority in 2020, whether it was the House Minority Leader, the Republican leader in the Senate, the state Republican Party chair, all of them denied wholesale that Lauren Culp had won, that the election was illegitimate, and they didn't miss a beat. And so for Shasti Conrad now in the Seattle Times to just allow her to say, oh, well, we're fighting to make sure every eligible vote counts. Washington Republicans are denying election results. It's so incredibly disingenuous, but this is the stuff that Democrats have found works. So now here's a story where Lauren Culp, you know, everyone's on the left's favorite person to hate and to try to tie the rest of the Republican Party to. Oh, there's a story about Lauren Culp. Oh, let me text my friend, my reporter friend at the Seattle Times, this statement for them to just drop in completely uncritically, and then we can tie all Republicans back to Lauren Culp. That's exactly what happens here. And the Seattle Times just lets them get away with it. So anyway, I'm glad that his attorney can't practice law for a year. Although I read he was like 69 and he's like, man, I'm not really practicing law anymore anyway. So I'm not sure about the actual consequences. And then, Nicole, you were saying that Lauren Culp put out some nasty tweet about Dave Reichert.
Well, I mean, he says, I'm reading it right now, don't vote or support before doing your research. That's how we got in this mess to begin with. If you want someone who has a worse constitutional voting record than some Democrats, he's your man.
What is he even talking about?
Well, and then he posts Dave Reichert's constitutional votes, 40% over a lifetime. I don't know. I don't really know how these are calculated, or like, I guess the way he votes, whether it's in relation to the Constitution,
On votes in Congress. First of all, who does he want people to vote for? Him? I love how a failed gubernatorial candidate who lost by staggering margins mm-hmm. is like, feels the need to like, talk down to someone who actually has a chance to win.
Right. I mean, and then he comments again because he's like, people are all mad at me. Like, it's my voting record. I'm just sharing information. So, yeah, I don't know why he's even getting into this argument.
Way.
And then he tweeted a picture of everyone in the debate tomorrow and called it a clown show. So he's all over Republicans right now.
He lost by a tremendous margin. Yeah. So it's like, who are you to criticize anyone else who's running for office? I don't understand that at all.
I mean, sharing information is one thing. I guess it just needs this picture. I don't know.
We'll dive into that. Maybe we talk about it more tomorrow. But it's absolutely ridiculous. And the vilification of someone like Dave Reichert because he's not, 100% in line with what you want him to be. And so mm-hmm. you'd rather, have Bob Ferguson? Because those are your freaking options, Lauren Culp.
Right.
You can convince your supporters. That's the choice. It's either a Republican who shares most of your values, probably 98%, or it's Bob Ferguson. That's the stupidity of what you're doing. And I don't know if you don't realize it, if you don't care, if you just want the whole system to burn down because you lost and you feel sorry for yourself and you're angsty or whatever it is. But that is what you're doing. By splitting the Republican vote, by acting like a child, like a petty, petulant child who's really upset that they didn't win or that Republicans didn't, I don't know, coalesce behind your lies about the election. And then you're going to split Republican votes in a state where you cannot afford to lose one. And then you're going to hand the freaking election over to Bob Ferguson. How dumb is that? And then when Bob Ferguson wins, you're going to whine and complain. Go away. Go away. Wow. I'm very angry today. Okay. Seattle firefighters. Nicole.
I still don't know which button it is. Got to figure that out.
Oh, the applause button.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciated the fact that the Seattle Firefighters Union Local 27 diving into the Seattle City Council races and throwing their endorsement behind challengers, not incumbents. And more than perhaps anyone. You know, firefighters, police officers, they see every single day in downtown Seattle how truly disturbing things have gotten. I mean, the number of overdoses, the number of crimes, what their firefighters are faced with out on the front lines. So they are endorsing the challenger for Andrew Lewis, which is Bob Kettle. They said, as a former naval officer and civic leader, Bob Kettle is uniquely focused on public safety and quality of life for every person in District 7. So that is the downtown area. And I've said Andrew Lewis does not deserve his job back. I don't know much about Bob Kettle. We haven't been able to get him on the show. But Andrew Lewis has to face punishments for his flip-flopping on issues related to public safety. And then they also, importantly, are endorsing Tanya Wu. So Tanya Wu is running against Tammy Morales in District 2, which is like Chinatown International District, SoDo, and South Seattle, areas that have a huge issue as it pertains to petty crime and serious crime. I mean, look at the shootings that have happened in our city. A lot of them happen in District 2. So they say if Tanya Wu is a lifelong Seattle resident and business owner in the Chinatown International District community, Tanya Wu is already a leader in District 2 and knows how important public safety is to the people of Seattle. And I am really happy to see the firefighters come out and put their support behind just different people. And again, you know, I think sometimes you think about, oh, it's the devil you don't know. And I, like I said, I don't know much about Bob Kettle besides his naval background. We haven't been able to get him to come on the show, which is kind of a red flag for me. But Andrew Lewis has just been throwing out red flags for 3 years. And certainly he doesn't deserve another chance in another term. And so I would like to see what someone else can do. And I've heard wonderful things about Tanya Wu. I mean, Tammy Morales, once Shama Sawant leaves the city council because she's not running for her seat again, Tammy Morales will be the most fringe member remaining. And being able to take her out of the equation at City Hall when it comes to, you know, how highly ideological she is when she considers the issues. She's considering issues based on her, first of all, her fringe ideology, but also the fringe ideology and the wants and the desires of what I believe is a very, very small fraction of her constituency. And you need someone who is interested in doing good for the most amount of people. And I've heard wonderful things about Tanya Wu. So we've reached out to the Seattle Firefighters Union, hoping maybe we can get them on at some point to talk about not only these endorsements, but what brought it about and some of the things that those firefighters have been faced with. I mean, when you talk about, I feel for them significantly because, you know, police, that they signed up for, you know, going in, meeting a certain level of danger, and they've got firearms and the bulletproof vests. And I think, I don't know if Seattle firefighters now have to have bulletproof vests with them. I think they might. Will you Google that? I think they actually changed that. And they're like, actually armed with vests in certain instances, perhaps. Know. Okay, maybe I'm just I'm pretty sure. But
I know they have to have the police with them.
Well, right. And so they, you know, things have gotten so bad where they need to wait for a police response. I mean, I can't even imagine how many overdose deaths that they're responding to on a daily basis. And it's just not tenable. It's absolutely ridiculous. The amount of danger, I mean, above and beyond what they sign up for, right? If you're a firefighter, you're signing up for a certain level of danger associated to doing your job. But I think what they're experiencing right now is through the roof. Did you see anything about that?
Yeah, I do see I think they have the option to wear them. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's a
requirement.
Right.
It just shows how dangerous things are. But so, yes. I mean, it makes sense. That makes sense, though. If you're responding to shootings and stuff because there's injured people, like, yeah, bulletproof vest makes a lot of sense for first responders. So anyway, I just wanted to update you on those endorsements. And we'll be covering more of the Seattle City Council races, certainly, as things progress. All right, coming up next, there was another auction when it came to our state's cap and trade program. Of course, every time there's an auction of those credits, it can have an impact on gas prices. So we're going to talk about that coming up next with our friend Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center. But first, I've been talking about our friends over at First Mark Insurance. Mike and I are now members of the First Mark family. We're so glad we made the switch. And we did so after taking the First Mark challenge in the spring. We talked to them, just, you know, scheduled a Zoom meeting, talked to them about our insurance needs, our current insurance. They went out for free, shopped all the major carriers for us, came back, presented us in an easy to understand way with our options. And we said, yes, we want to become members of the First Mark family. Here's Dave Taylor. He is the CEO of First Mark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become FirstMark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to FirstMark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the FirstMark challenge is.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we talk about, and we're going to talk about it coming up next, the high price of gasoline, you know, inflation, the tax that started, you know, the money that was coming out of your paychecks as of July 1st because of the long-term care tax. You know, I think everyone's looking for ways, if we're realistic, how can we cut back? And part of that is saving money on something that everyone needs, which is insurance. And you can do that without sacrificing service, without sacrificing the quality of your insurance. So take the FirstMark challenge like Mike and I did. We're really glad we did. We love the service that we get from our friends over at FirstMark. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. Okay, there was an article in the Washington State Standard, which is new, and I'm kind of liking it. It's a new news publication covering politics in Washington, and our friend Jerry Kornfield, who used to be with the Everett Herald, is now writing for them, and he wrote this. And I am liking the Washington State Standard so far. I feel like they're being very unbiased. So a little plug for them, little free plug. The headline, high prices trigger special auction of emission allowances. So, of course, this whole ordeal with Washington State's carbon tax, I'll admit, it gets a little complicated in the weeds, but essentially we have a cap and trade program. They have these auctions a few times a year where they sell these allowances, and then depending on how many people want to buy, that dictates the prices, and that's what impacts you at the pump. I mean, that's what impacts you at the pump. Governor Inslee didn't want to admit it, but obviously that is what is happening. And so it led to Washington having, for the first time in history, the highest gas prices in the nation. In fact, prices went up so high that part of this system is triggering another auction, a special auction of these allowances to try to sort of balance things out a little bit. I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? What does it mean for us? We asked the expert on this issue, Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center, to come on and explain. Todd Myers, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you for having me. It's always nice to chat with you.
Well, I thought I'd say, hey, California's back to having the highest gas prices in the nation, not us, so everything's fine, right?
Woo! We're number two.
I had read articles, oh, you know, Washington's going to stay at number one. So can you explain for folks who are all riled up, like, what is the reason for the back and forth? If we shot up because of the carbon tax, I mean, what's going on?
So there are lots of things, of course, that play into gas prices. And this is sort of the nugget of truth that people who deny that the tax on CO2 emissions is driving prices, this is sort of the nugget of truth that they hit on, which is there's market forces, there's regulations, there's, you know, refinery closures, all these sorts of things contribute. And of course, California has its own cap and trade system, tax on CO2 emissions. So they just had an auction. We don't know the results yet. So, I mean, we compete with each other for who taxes gas more. So there's lots of different factors. It's unclear why they've jumped up ahead of us again. But Washington had never been number one before. So the fact that we were even number one for any period of time, and now we're still number two, is indicative that something has changed. And it's very clear in the data that the tax on CO2 emissions is a key driver.
Yeah. So there was this article in the Washington State Standard, the headline, high prices trigger special auction of emission allowances. So just a few days ago, there was a special auction of these allowances, which is part of the cap and trade program. And I thought, well, let's get Todd on, because it even confuses me. So why is there a special auction?
Right. So there are quarterly auctions. So the way the system works is, if you want to emit CO2, you have to buy a permit. Those permits are purchased at auctions. There's a regular auction every quarter. However, if the price goes so high, what they will do is that they will do a special auction for a limited number of permits to try to increase supply. So it's just supply and demand. You increase the supply of permits, hopefully the price comes down. California has had this in their system for a decade. They have never triggered it. Washington State triggered it after our second auction, and we have another regular auction later this month, and we are likely to trigger it again. So it's difficult to know what this means in terms of gas prices for a variety of reasons, But what it does mean is that the system is out of balance, and that the prices are much higher than they expected. And my favorite quote was from the Department of Ecology saying, oh, this is part of the system. This is not an emergency. anytime somebody says this is not an emergency, it might be an emergency.
You mentioned the system is out of balance. Are there any changes that could be made to the program through the legislature or through the governor's office that could stop kind of these high swings and the need for an emergency auction?
Yeah, the first and foremost is that they could lower the upper limit. So they're at $80 a metric ton, which is about 72 cents a gallon, maybe 70 cents a gallon. What happens in the system is you can buy basically as many, that's the cap, so you can buy as many credits as you want to. We can just simply bring down that cap and turn it into a flat fee rather than having this very constrained thing, which is driving prices up. You could make other methods of compliance easier. So there's a way to invest in other carbon reduction projects that count toward your compliance. Washington State has basically limited or banned those, meaning that the only way that you can really comply is to buy permits. The state likes that because it raises lots of tax money, but it drives prices up. So there's lots of individual things we can do to keep prices down. But because high prices mean more money into the government, the governor and legislators probably don't want to do those things.
So in theory, if the special auction that happened, I believe it was August 9th, was triggered by high prices, should that auction be now bringing the cost down at the pump for consumers? Are we seeing that yet?
No. It's hard to say, but half of those permits were sold at $66 a metric ton. And just to put that in context, that's just under 60 or 50, it's about 50 something cents a gallon. It's higher than the last auction. So it could be that the prices actually continue to go up even though they've added more supply because supply is so constrained. So what the indications are is that the price of the tax will continue to go up. And the other issue is it gets even worse next year for two reasons. One, the total number of permits for sale go down next year radically. So we're limiting supply even more. But the other thing is that these permits that were sold are not added. They don't come from nowhere. They are taken from the future and moved forward. So what it does is it lowers the number of permits available in the future. So it'll increase prices in the future, even if it temporarily reduces them now. So it just compounds the problem. It doesn't solve it.
Yeah. What's the government doing with all this money, Todd?
They don't know yet, right? They only budgeted for a certain amount of it, much less than they're bringing in. So what's likely to happen in the next legislative session, which starts January of next year, is that they're going to have a money bath and start figuring out all ways to spend lots and lots of new taxpayer dollars, even as they deny that they've raised taxes, which is sort of ironic.
Not a tax rebate? You don't think that old Jay Inslee will send a check out to all of us?
I'm very dubious that Jay Inslee will send a tax rebate. He has promised in every election that we didn't need tax increases, and he has offered tax increases every year. So it would not be consistent with his past behavior.
That's very diplomatic. All right, Todd Myers, thanks for keeping us up to date on all of this.
Thanks for having me on.
You heard it from Todd Myers. He doesn't think Jay Inslee will offer us a tax rebate with all this money. Oh, I'm shocked. And also, did Todd really say things are going to be worse next year on the gas price front? You know, Todd, we didn't need that today. You're just bringing us down with all this depressing news. All right, coming up, actually, let's just get to it right now. We'll skip over, let's save that for a moment. I want to... This story is just like, what do I do with this? Spokane's mayor, Nadine Woodward, who's been on the show many times, she is going to be in a tough re-election campaign. Democrats would love to get their hands on the mayoral office in Spokane. And Nadine Woodward just handed them absolutely perfect campaign fodder. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, as you know, there have been some really horrific wildfires over in Spokane County. So not a surprise that there was, especially over there, a big prayer get together to pray for the people who have been impacted. Except there were some guests at this particular prayer event who will sound familiar to you and who, politically speaking, political candidates probably shouldn't touch with like a 100-foot pole. Unfortunately, Nadine Woodward, who's the Republican mayor of Spokane, ended up attending. This is the article from the Spokesman Review. Woodward faces condemnation after appearing on stage with Matt Shea at Christian nationalist event. So in case, I'm not going to rehash all the Matt Shea drama, but Matt Shea was a state lawmaker. He ended up being ousted from his own caucus because there was this independent investigation that found that essentially he was proactively encouraging rebellion against the United States government. And so he's been accused of being a domestic terrorist, although there haven't been criminal charges brought. But he's just a real fringy type guy. And I mean, I think that's a very fair characterization. So for someone like Mayor Woodward, who, look, it's red on that side of the state, but the city of Spokane is not all that red. And so Democrats really, really want to take that office from her. And so for her to show up, and not just at this prayer event, but on stage with Matt Shea as he was offering a prayer. Here's a clip of the video.
Lord, encourage them. Give them courage, your courage, to stand on the foundation, the rock, Jesus Christ. Give them right now, Lord, unwavering ability to speak the truth into the darkness. And no matter what anybody says around them, they will glorify, honor, and praise you every single thing they do. In Jesus' mighty name, and everybody in one gigantic shout.
So anyway, there was also like really blatantly political messaging in some of the prayers as she was standing up on stage with Matt Shea. So the mayor put out a statement. It was shared by Melissa Luck over at KXLY in Spokane. It said, I did not seek, nor do I accept any support from Matt Shea. I am opposed to his political views as they are a threat to our democracy, and I regret my public appearance with him. I was invited to share in prayer with several thousand citizens out of heartfelt concern for fire victims, first responders, and our whole community. I was not aware that he would be at the event last night, and it only became apparent as I was walking on stage that he would be leading the prayer. I should have made better efforts to learn who would be speaking at the event. She goes on to say, there will be plenty of time to discuss political positions during the rest of this campaign. Now, as our region is hurting and our focus is on friends, neighbors, loved ones, and the response effort is not the time. So anyway, of course, I have some thoughts, and I know Nicole has some thoughts too about how big of a scandal really is this for the mayor of Spokane. But it is an unforced error of epic proportions. I mean, if there is one political figure in Washington state that, like I said, whether you're on the right or the left, that you probably shouldn't be seen associating with, it's probably Matt Shea, would be really high up on the list. And so, of course, Lisa Brown, the Democrat who's run for just about everything politically in Washington state, former director of the Department of Commerce, she is, and I don't blame her. I would do it too if I were in her position. She is, of course, sharing this video for all to see. Please read, watch the whole thread. The mayor should be disavowing Matt Shea, an anti-woman, anti-LGBTQ extremist associated with political violence. Instead, she's on the stage with him while fires rage in our county. Time for new leadership in Spokane. And then it went back and forth. And Nadine Woodward came out and basically says, okay, Lisa Brown is now using this to politicize it. She says, I'm deeply disturbed by Matt Shea. That Matt Shea chose to politicize a gathering of thousands of citizens who joined together yesterday. I attended the event with one purpose only, and that was to join fellow citizens to begin the healing process. I'm disappointed that Lisa Brown has chosen to distract from our community's primary purpose at this moment. Anyway, normal political back and forth. So this is where Nicole and I were sort of debating before the show. I was like, I have been at many events, right? Where, and I've talked about this on the show, where I knew someone was going to be there who, if I were photographed with them, I'd be given crap about it, right? But I just choose sort of not to care. I mean, I'm not running for political office. I'm not working for some sort of employer who's going to fire me over it. So I get to decide, like, is that worth the hit to my reputation or is it not? And I think both of us are in agreement, Nicole. Come on, don't disappear from people. Where are you?
I'm here.
I think both of us are in agreement that I'm kind of at a loss for what she should have done. So if she's telling the truth that I didn't know he was going to be at the event, mm-hmm. And I certainly didn't know he was going to be leading the prayer until, like, I'm about to walk up on stage. What do you do? Do you turn around and leave when you're at a prayer event for fire victims? Do you just suck it up? What do you do if you're the mayor of Spokane and you know the optics of it?
Go. Yeah, I don't put as much blame on her as I think everybody is. And I think that you were quite critical of her, or quite reactive about this. Oh. And I just think that she was put in a bad place. She's here, come and have this prayer and this church service to, like, support yeah. these fire victims. And then, oh, here's Matt Shea. Oh crap. What do I do? And like, yeah. okay, well, I'm just not going to, you know, talk to him, but then they, like, throw you on stage and he prays with you. I don't think it's the worst thing. I don't think that, you know, I don't think there is a great way for her to have handled that in the moment, because you're there for the fire victims, right? Mm-hmm. You're there for these people that might lose their home, have lost their home, whatever. And then I think that Lisa Brown's tweet is actually worse than the situation that Nadine was in, because Nadine is simply dealing with a situation she was put in. She didn't ask to be put in it, and is trying to keep the attention on the fire victims. And Nadine is making this instantly political. Lisa is making it instantly political by her tweet being extremely politics, and it's a lie. Like, she was there to pray for the wildfire victim,
right.
And she's saying that she's there to, like, what, campaign with Matt Shea?
She didn't say that. She said the mayor should be disavowing Matt Shea, an anti-woman, blah 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 blah.
Right,
blah.
Right. But then lists
instead, she's on stage
things.
With him while fires rage in our county. Yeah. So
she's saying she's on stage with Matt Shea, like they're, like, you know, together there.
Yeah. She's not acknowledging that they were on stage because of the fire victim. So right. Yeah. No, I agree with all that. I agree with Nadine's own assessment, though, that her campaign should have done more to know who would be there.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, like, if it's an event of this nature, when you have the pastor, that Sean Fecht guy, how do you say his last name, where he's known to run in these circles, certainly you know who the pastor is going to be. Mm-hmm. And certainly you know that Matt Shea is kind of part, loosely affiliated with all these people. And Matt Shea is a known entity in Spokane.
Right.
So I do agree with her. Because, like I said, I've been at events where I'm like, God, I hope that person doesn't ask for a photo. But I know they're going to be there, right?
Sure.
And I think especially when you're running a political campaign, and that's her own assessment, I should have done more to know who's going to be there. But I don't disagree that you don't get up the stairs and walk away. Or you don't grab the microphone and disavow Matt Shea at an event for fire
victims.
Make it
political, yes.
Right. So. Apparently, like, she gave him a hug after, which I probably wouldn't have given him a hug. Well, but at the end of the day, I think it's an unbelievable, unforced error that they will 100% capitalize on. I do not know if I would have done anything differently in her position. Because you're risking looking like a jerk when it comes to praying for fire victims and just sucking it up and being like, I gotta be on stage next to Matt Shea. Well, Lisa Brown's gonna have a good time with this. You know what I mean?
Yep. And I'm not sure that I would have gone to that event. You can pray alone home for the victims, because I think that you're, as the mayor of in an area that is dealing with all this, maybe just stick to the work. That's kind of what I think. And so not that she shouldn't be associated with religion, because she obviously, freedom of religion, but I just think that you're setting yourself up for these situations, and it distracts from the victims of the real issue.
Yeah, for sure. And I asked in the live chat, does it bother you that Spokane's mayor appeared on stage with Matt Shea? 27% said yes. 73% said no, and I'm sure that we will get to some comments on that coming up later. But yeah, that's a tough one. And I think you have to look at it. My thing is always, and what I try, the lens I try to look at stories through, and we always have these discussions before the show, is if it was a person of the other political party, would I give them that much grace? You know what I mean? So I try to, you know, I try to give everyone the same amount of the benefit of the doubt and the same amount of grace. And so I'm thinking, okay, if you had Bob Ferguson who walked up on a stage with Shama Sawant, boy, would we have a good time with that, right?
Oh, I don't even think it would. I don't think anybody would bat an eye.
Oh, I would totally do that segment. I'd be like, here's Bob Ferguson on stage with Shama Sawant, which didn't happen, by the way, to the best of my knowledge. And I'd be like, so I think you have to be consistent in, like, how does that look and what does it say about you? even if you didn't know that they were going to be there. So, but okay, maybe so we can talk about it in a nuance.
That's for us. So yes, that we might cover it that way, but would the media cover
no,
it?
No, of course not.
Of
no.
Of course not.
No, and that would be a different story. Of course right. The media wouldn't cover it that way. That's a whole different subject.
But see, now we would cover it just because it would be not covered by the media. But I don't really think that if you put a bunch of Democrats in a room, or to pray, I don't think anybody would bat an eye over how extreme I'd be like, there's one a is bunch than of the other.
I'd be like, Shama Sawant's in a room praying?
Well, that would be the story. But
see,
yeah.
I just feel like pulling back the curtain sometimes at the conversations we have about, okay, I think there are some plausible... there's some plausible deniability on her part, right? But then I have to ask myself and really challenge myself, okay, would I give that much grace to someone in a different situation that also shared a stage with someone who was so problematic? Right. I like Nadine, I like her a lot, but it's a self-inflicted error that she certainly does not need at this stage in the election.
And what we've been saying all along is that these candidates have to own their campaigns more because they give too much control to the people in their camp and they're screwing them over.
Yeah, or they're just not thinking. And I think you've got to think like, hey, who's going to be there? Who's going to give the prayer?
Right.
You don't ask like, who's she going to be praying with? Right. What are they going to say?
Right.
So I think you really do just have to be careful. And again, no unforced errors. Okay. All right. Coming up next, we'll get to your questions and comments from the stream. We're going to save National for our sanity check at the end of the show today related to the president's trip to Maui. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. If you are even thinking, if you're at the precipice of thinking about selling your home, please check out sellwithwes.com because he and his team have some really innovative marketing strategies and options for people, especially if you need a little work done to your home. We spoke with Susan in Federal Way, lived in her house for 25 years, decided she didn't need that much space, wanted to sell it, but didn't have the time or the money to do what needed to be done. We talked to her about the success she found using Wes Jones and the Listing Boost concierge service.
I knew I had to paint. I knew I needed to get new flooring. I need to get new lighting. I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. Work started immediately. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. That's really cool. I mean, $200,000 more than if she had not picked up the phone to call Wes Jones. And so she has a remarkable story. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Even if you're not sure if you're ready to sell, just check out their home value calculator. That's a great first step. On their website, you can see how much your home is worth. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, we're skipping past National because I'm going to talk about it in my closing sanity check. I've got a clip from our fearless leader, Joe Biden, to play for all of you. But let's get your questions and comments on Bob Ferguson and just these, I think, stories that really should be a warning for people who are considering voting for him for governor about how he's acting in his job as attorney general and how that might translate if he's in charge of the state. Jackie McWalter Huff says, Ferguson has cost the taxpayers more than millions. He sues for the headlines, doesn't follow procedure, and should not hold any public office. Why do we keep electing politicians who care more about their power status and ego than serving the people? I find it fairly depressing that when common sense people try to vote, the status quo out for new blood, it always seems to fail. We need to awaken the reasonable middle and pry people from their political affiliations. That was me, not Jackie. That was my little ad on the end. On the Lauren Culp story, his attorney can't practice law for a year, and the Seattle Times reporting on it. Mandy did say, because I was ranting about Lauren Culp and his, you know, senseless legal challenges for an election he lost by more than 500,000 votes, which is a huge margin in Washington state. Mandy said, so we're always supposed to accept the results of voting without question. In a state that mails in ballots. Okay, sure. No, I'm not saying that at all. I mean, I think that there is a time and a place. And do I think fraud happens? Yes. I think opportunities for fraud are far more common than actual fraud itself. And an opportunity for fraud being, hey, you have a ballot the chain of custody issues or ballots being sent to people who can't vote, aren't alive, whatever it is, that's an opportunity for fraud. But the existence of that ballot is not in and of itself fraud. So no, I don't think that you have to just say elections are perfect. I don't believe they're perfect. But the dude lost by 545,000 votes and never once brought forth concrete evidence to show that there was fraud that stole the election from him. He called it illegitimate. And so, and to me, it gets into this crying wolf thing, where you've got all these claims of stolen elections, and every time one of those claims is shot down in the courts, people just stop listening. And so then when you have actual instances of fraud, people are just like, look, I don't want to hear it, because you've cried wolf on election fraud for all these other reasons. So I think there's a time and a place, and a time and a place is, do you have evidence? And is there evidence that would change the result of an election? And in the case of Lauren Culp, the answer was most definitively no. Todd Welch says, why did the Seattle Times even get a quote from the Democratic Party chair? A quote from the head of the Bar Association would be acceptable, but not a political party. I agree. And it sounds like the Times didn't even, she just offered it up. She like texted the reporter on the story how she felt about it. Of course the chair of the state Democratic Party is going to be happy with it. Of course they are. And so again, it's just that show of bias that like the Times doesn't even realize, I don't think. And they're just like, oh, let's insert that in there, where she's acting like every Republican in the state is an election denier, and then let's just not challenge it. And that's just not fair. That's ridiculous, because I would say the vast, vast majority of Republicans in our state, particularly those in actual elected office and positions of authority, did not believe that Trump won the 2020 election, that Culp won the 2020 election, and they spoke out in the contrary. So incredibly irresponsible. On Culp's attacks on Dave Reichert, or his sharing of Dave Reichert's voting history and suggesting that voting for people like Dave Reichert is how we got into this position to begin with. Gil says, I'm at a point where I would vote for a ham sandwich rather than someone with a D after their name. Hey, ham sandwiches are delicious. Don't discount a ham sandwich. He said, look at where we are now. At least it's damage control against a uniparty government. Yeah, but how do you think you're going to break up one party rule? By also splitting apart the Republican vote in a state where there aren't as many Republicans as Democrats? That's like the worst thing you can do. You can't afford to lose a single Republican vote. You need to get a bunch of independent and moderates to vote with you, including moderate Democrats. So until the Republican Party in our state can get its you-know-what together and can stop vilifying and attacking each other, you think that the state party has any chance of winning statewide office? I don't. Not until they can get their own house in order. Ambulance? Is that, have we talked about this before? It sounds like that song, Black Betty, Ambulance.
Oh, I think you did mention that one other time.
What is the actual, is it ambulance?
Black
Betty.
It must be ambulance.
Ampersand. What is the lyric?
Know.
Okay. Dave Reichert is a Washington Republican. He is not a Texas Republican. He is also a Republican that can win in Washington. I voted for him in my district every year. That's the thing. It's like, you can have your ideal candidate. Maybe it's a Lauren Culp, where you're like, that's my guy. I align with him on almost everything. That doesn't mean he can win. And sure, everybody has the right to vote for someone they believe in. I'm not saying you have to suck it up and vote for someone who you don't believe in. Like if you don't think Dave Reichert's Republican enough and that just doesn't suit you, your vote is your vote. Your vote is an important thing, and you don't have to water down your vote or your beliefs for anyone. But the thing I always preach is like, okay, do you want a quote-unquote rhino, or do you want an actual Democrat? Like, that's the choice really in Washington, if we're being realistic, that you have to make. Because ultra-conservative Republicans can't win in statewide office. They can win individual legislative districts and local races, et cetera, but they're not going to be able to win a statewide race. So it's sort of one of these things where it's like, you're going to have to take what you can get. And Dave Reichert is, I think, the only chance Republicans have of trying to take back a statewide race. On gas prices, Liz said, Inslee's probably upset we're not number one anymore. He's probably sobbing in his office. I'm sure we'll be back at one soon. Rick says, the 46% gallon carbon tax that was recently added irritates me to no end. Jay Inslee's not going to impact global warming one iota with our tax dollars. You better talk to China first. Mass polluters. Yeah. Casey says, kind of nuts how humans throwing money at weather patterns that have gone on since the dinosaurs can change anything. A couple comments on Nadine. Matthew Cook said, I get Nicole's point. So I think you had the point about maybe that isn't even an event she should be at. Maybe right. she should be at the fire lines. And I'm not saying she hasn't been, but Matthew Cook said, I get Nicole's point. However, fellowship and community is part of being a Christian. Definitely a balancing act if you're running for office, especially in Washington, the most unchurched state in the union, which I think is still true, right? I did a poll. Let me just see the updated poll results. Does it bother you that Spokane's mayor appeared on stage with Matt Shea? 28% said yes. 72% said no. So I think the vast majority of people, and look, I think that is a reasonable position if we're using common sense and logic. Like, what did you want her to do? Did you want her to turn around and walk out? And then people would have been like, Nadine Woodward abruptly leaves prayer service for fire victims. So I don't know if she could have found a winning place. All right, good questions and comments per the usual, everyone. We before we started the show today, I'll get to Sandy to check in a second. We taped our Sunday interview with the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Reichdahl, which I found out I've always said his name wrong. It's not Reichdahl, it's Reichdahl.
Reichdahl.
Like a rake. You know, I look forward to airing this interview because it's a very reasoned, nice, detailed conversation about some of the challenges in public education. He's very disarming. I'll give him that.
He is. He's very good at that
because he shows up. And this is the thing. I think this was what I always appreciated about Dory, too. What politicians didn't get about Dory is he was going to be 1,000 times harder on you if you didn't show up.
Oh, yeah.
And if they showed up, he'd sit and have a nice conversation with them and, you know, could make his position known. But that's what politicians like. Oh, I'm getting out of something by not going. It's like, no, you're ensuring that he does not let this go, and he talks about it for months on end because you wouldn't show up.
Right.
So I appreciate that about Chris Reichdahl, the fact that he showed up. We had a couple jokes about, you know, our disagreement on some issues, but
it does make me think I you know, the importance of reaching out to the people that are in those positions cannot be understated, because to me, both of you were making points from people that you've heard from, and you've both heard from a lot of people. And so you were saying, I've heard this, this, and this. And he's like, yeah, but then I hear this, this, and this.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just think that there, it cannot be understated. Don't rely on the media to get the opinions to their leaders, elected leaders, because I think that it has to come from each and every one of you saying, I have this case, I have this case, I have this case. Because to a lot of what we heard was, yeah, but that story doesn't represent most.
Yeah, and that could be true. And
it's hard to argue with because you don't have everybody's story right in front of you.
Well, and you can't.
So they have to hear it from
you
everyone.
You can't base your entire opinion off of anecdotes, right, that you get for individuals. It has to be, what is actually happening? What do we have proof of? And if he wants to respond and say, yeah, but I don't hear that from so-and-so, then that's essentially what we do. We say, hey, we heard this story and we brought it forth. And so it would be naive to think that we are not in our own echo chamber in a way as well.
Of course.
You know, we have differing views on some things, but I think we look at things through a lens of common sense. We appreciate the value of consensus, of seeing the other side of the issue, but that is in and of itself a little bit of an echo chamber. And I think we tend to push back against authority in any form. And in this state, it happens to be Democratic authority. But it was just a really interesting conversation. And I think he made a lot of good points about, this is a long pitch to get you to subscribe to the Sunday show so you can see his interview. But I think he made a lot of good points. Like, I was bringing up test scores, and to me, they're terrible. But I think he made a lot of good points about why test scores are not the end all be all for whether we're putting our kids out with the skills they need to succeed, which I was like, you know, he made a lot of interesting historical points that I liked. So anyway, Chris Reichdahl, he's going to be on Sundays with Subscribers this week, which if you're not a subscriber already,
and we'll discuss sign more up on Monday.
And we'll discuss undividedpod.com.
So make sure you know what we're talking about on Monday.
Yes. All right. before we get to our closing sanity check, I've been talking about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I've had awesome results on the program. As you know, everywhere I go, people who have heard that I was doing it, they're like, oh, you look so great. You look great. I'm like, ah, thank you. I came here compliments. So, you know, send your compliments and I love to get them. Who doesn't? What woman doesn't, you know? I'm really excited. I'm about to have my last wedding dress fitting. I'm down 36 pounds on the program. I'm so glad I started it when I did. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routine. And you don't feel like you have to be on a diet for the rest of your life, which I think is important. I think there's a lot of fad and crash diets you can do. And then it's like, okay, am I going to gain the right back? So I've had great results and I'll just keep encouraging encouraging you, if you've been thinking about it, you can get fantastic results in just a month or two. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. All right, let's do it. Let's get to our closing sanity check. So President Joe Biden went to check out the scene in Maui, which I'm glad he did. I mean, we had kind of talked about this because remember he was on the beach and a reporter's like, hey, do you have comments on the latest, you know, death toll in Maui? And he said, no comment. I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, well, do I even want him to go? Because sometimes, regardless of the political party of the president, sometimes it is more of an inconvenience for them to show up to an active emergency zone. You have a lot of resources that are required for their mere presence, but it's all right. So Biden went to Maui. And the man,
oh man,
guys, you know, I'm not making fun of him. This is insane to think that this individual could possibly hope to run the country for another 4 years. So he's speaking to a group and he tries to relate to the depth of the loss that they must be feeling.
I don't want to compare difficulties, but we have a little sense, Jill and I, what it's like to lose a home. Years ago, now 15 years ago, I was in Washington doing Meet the Press. It was a sunny Sunday, and lightning struck at home on a little lake. It's outside of our home, not a lake, a big pond, and hit a wire and came up underneath our home into the heating ducts, the air conditioning duct. To make a long story short, I almost lost my wife, my 67 Corvette, and my cat. But all kidding aside.
First of all,
oh my gosh.
He didn't. No, he didn't. This man, I don't know if he's, I think he's one of those people who they tell a lie for so long that then they're like, oh no, that really happened. So right. There was like a fire, but reports from the Times said it was very, very small.
It was like
easily contained.
Or something.
He said he almost lost his wife, and then he laughs about almost losing his Corvette. And at the beginning, I love how he says, I don't want to try to compare, you know, difficulties.
And then, like,
and then I'm going to and talk about this mostly fictional story about his wife, his cat, and his Corvette. And I'm like, this man. And there are countless other examples of his just fumbling.
Well, did you see him also fall asleep during this program that he went to in Maui?
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Oh, yeah,
see,
he fell asleep.
And again, why this is insanity check today is it's people, this is insane. This is insane to think that. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, I still don't believe that Democrats, that this is their plan.
I don't want to.
Sorry.
I think that
compare difficulties, but we have a little sense.
We have a little sense. I don't want to think that this is actually their plan. I still think there is some way to get around it. But at the same time, he already beat Trump. So if Trump is going to be it for Republicans, which he's way ahead in the polls, says he's not dropping out, I guess why wouldn't you run the person who just beat him? But this is insane. I mean, it is insane to think that those could potentially be our options again. Donald Trump and Joe Biden? I mean, as a country, there has to be some full-fledged, forceful rejection of both parties, to be frank. But of this idea that, I mean, we just have to kind of take what we're given. And it's just really insane to me. That man should not be in the White House right now. He is not mentally fit. It's insane. And that is just one example of it. And I was also told, by the way, Nicole, it's Black Betty, Bam-a-Lam.
Okay.
It's not ambulance. It's not Ambalam.
Okay.
Bam-a-Lam.
Bam-a-Lam.
Thank you, Heidi and Bob.
Got
for
it.
Letting us know. As you know, I'm not good at like anything related to music or movies or trivia.
Yeah.
That's just what it sounds to me. Black Betty, ambulance.
Ambulance.
You want
I
me
like
to start?
That.
Do you want me to end the show now?
Okay,
you're looking
yeah,
at me like,
out.
End the show. All right. I just want to hang out with you guys. Is that so bad? Can I not hang out with people a little bit longer? All right. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I need to improve my posture while I'm sitting here. Again, we have a great interview coming up on Sunday. So subscribers this week. So run right now to undividedpod.com. Go. Sign up for a subscription. It's just $5 a month. Again, undividedpod.com. UndividedPod.com. We would really appreciate the support. It's how we continue to do this show. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.